Another Freedom Fest special here. You can watch an exclusive interview between investigative journalist Lee Smith and the Valley's great Victor Davis Hanson, classicist, historian, master of all. There's nobody that compares to him, one of the brightest minds in the world today. Lee and Victor talk about the threat the Chinese Communist Party poses to the United States and the West, as well as the left's desire to replicate the Chinese Communist Party's tyrannical rule here in the U.S.
Okay. I want to say what an honor it is to be on stage with Victor Davis Hanson.
Same here, Lee. Same here.
That's very kind.
It's nice to be in friendly territory where I work. I feel like I'm out west and being attacked all the time. But this is sort of like the wagon train inside the wagon train.
Yeah. No, it's very nice. And I think that everyone, you know, everyone understands the how you've helped us see different things. Everything from your book, The Case for Trump, to understanding classical antiquity, why these things matter to us now, how we understand our world, your different writings on military history, the way the West fights wars and win wars. And everyone recognized this contribution, and you have shaped how so many of us have think about the world and see the world. So really, I just want to thank you for all of that. Really amazing. And also, not just that, but for taking on the Academy inside the Academy.
Thank you.
Which is one of the most important fights that that we have right now.
Well, I think the reassuring idea is that in our darkest moments, if you look through history, we've been here before, and there's a way out of it. So history's valuable because it says you're not alone. There's people that were as good or better than you are that went through worse, and they survived. It's the 233rd year of this republic, and I don't think anybody in this audience got up this morning and said, you know, I think the woke people won. We're just going to give up the republic, and our grandparents, they're all done. I don't think that's going to happen.
I mean, this is inside of Washington. I left Washington recently. My family and I, we left Washington recently, and the way that people think is very different. And really, it's wonderful being out here in the Central Valley, a place I love. But that seems to me absolutely right. That our country, it's not just a great country; it's a big country too, where people have different ideas about where people see things very differently than the way people see it in Washington.
Yeah, most of my life I've been a big advocate of the university, and I think a lot of us here are educated formally or at least stamped with some sort of degree, but that's 32% of the country has a bachelor's degree. But if you want to know who has the finger in the dike that's saving the country, it's the other 66% that doesn't, because they're grounded in pragmatism. And I hate to say that as a person who believes in the higher education, but something went terribly wrong. And almost every problem that we see, whether it's Wall Street or the corporate Delta CEO, or it's Mark Zuckerberg, or it's the Twitter people, or the retired woke military, everything, all of that ideology came out of the university. Because the university said, we're not inductive, we're not empirical. We start with a premise, and we're going to re-educate you to reflect that premise. And so it's done a lot of damage. And the people who say, you know what, I have to get up every day and deal with reality, that's still the majority, and that's what's keeping the country going.
You saw this start to happen, I mean, in the 60s. You were part of the, you know, what was that your sense right then? You said, look, this is going to turn out to be a dangerous thing? Or when did it first strike you that this is a dangerous thing?
You know, I had a really practical father, a big Swedish guy from Kingsburg, and he farmed, and he was a Reed College administrator. And he said, I looked at a map, And you boy, the closest UC campus is UC Santa Cruz. He had no idea what an insane asylum it was. It had just opened. And he said, all three of you are going to go there and we can rent a house and save money. So we went there. It was just absolutely crazy. No grades, first co-ed dorms in the country, drugs. But here's the difference. The 60s radicals, for all the damage they did this country, they at least believed in the First Amendment. Now, they wanted the freedom to be pornographic and vulgar and use the F word, but they never censored you. But what happened now is we have the worst of the 60s. We have uncouth, crass people, but they don't believe in the First Amendment. They want to restrict speech. They want to restrict expression. And in the old days, the 60s said, we're so afraid of the corporate world and monopolies. And now it's bizarre. They're saying, we love the corporate world because they censor conservative. We love monopolies because they restrict access to social media. So they've taken 60s promiscuity and liberality and let it all hang out. And they've combined it with Victorian prudity, and it's weird, this new woke culture. I mean, how many times, every time you guys get up and somebody's telling you that you're a racist or you're illiberal and you look at who it is, it's the guy that runs Delta, $17 million a year, or it's Oprah from her $90 million mansion talking to LeBron from his $45 million mansion. This is a top-down revolution.
How did this happen? I mean, also, When did the idea of calling someone a racist, when did that become the thing that, well, that wins all arguments now?
Well, I think that as the 60s civil rights movement progressed, remember what it was. It was Martin Luther King's content of your character, not the color of your skin. And people really did believe that when you had an equality of opportunity, you would eventually have parity, and that didn't happen. So then the next stage was, we're going to have affirmative action to pay reparations, in a sense, and pick people by quotas to make up for past. And the American people sort of said, well, I don't like that, but we're going to let it go. And then when that didn't get the desired result, then that is perfect parity according to the percentage of the population, then they said, you know what? They started adding these adjectives. It wasn't just racism. If they couldn't find racism, then it was systemic. If you couldn't find aggressions, then it was microaggression. And when you started adding all these little adjectives, it showed you there was nothing there. We ended up with a world of Jesse Smollett, Duke LaCrosse, all of these psychodramas. And they just attach now racism, environmental racism, immigration racism. It's everywhere. And so it's nowhere. And I think everybody knows now that the way that the woke movement will die is when they call you a racist, you smile and say, so what? I don't care. You call me anything in the world. It has no effect on me. And I think we're about that far from getting there, because if enough people just say, no, it has no effect, I could care less what you call me. Racism doesn't mean anything other than the person who's leveling the charge is more likely him or herself a racist. And therefore, go. You guys do your worst and we'll do our best, and may the best person win.
I mean, one of the strange things, of course, is a lot of people leveling these accusations, whether it's corporations or figures like LeBron James. We've spoken about this a bit before. I mean, their relations with an authoritarian regime in China. So I guess I want to ask you, you know, about another struggle that we have as Americans, and that is a lot of people talk about China being our major strategic threat. And so I wanted to get your sense of that, your historical perspective as well.
Yeah, it's very scary, because the old Soviet Union turned in, of a 240 million people, it turned into 165 million Russia. That's a decrepit economy. They don't like us any more than the Chinese like us, but they're not an existential threat except for their nuclear arsenal. And it was Henry Kissinger, I'm not a big fan of him, but he was a brilliant guy. He said, under no circumstances should China and Russia be better friends than they are each to us. Triangulation. And with this crazy Russian hoax and a Russian colluder and Trump colluder under every bed, which we've heard about, we drove those two countries together and we lost pressure on it. We have India still, but China is, I don't like the word existential, but they're so much more sophisticated than the old Soviet Union. They have 380,000 students here. They call us racist. They just listen to the left, and then they recycle this, that you guys are racist. And if we were really racist, would you send 380,000 of your best students, the children of Communist Party members, to such a racist, anti-Asian country? Of course not. So they're over here to absorb our technology, our institutions, and then Xerox them back. They understand how the left hates America, so they want to piggyback and recycle that. And they're very sophisticated. And I think they feel that we're a played-out country. They look at all of the rioting last summer. They look at all the internal divisions. They said, you know what? They've had too much money. They had too much leisure. The democratic system doesn't work, and we're here to take over the world hegemony. And you know what they do in Asia? You talk to diplomats where I work, they come through the Hoover Institution, and they all say the same thing. If you talk to a South Korean general or an Australian member of parliament, they say, the Chinese come up to us, and they said, you're next to us, Taiwanese. You're next to us, Japanese. You're next to us, South Korean. America's way over there. They're never going to come to your aid. They're tired. They're fighting. You better cut a deal with us now before we get angry at you, because we're the future and they're the past. So you can't underestimate technological theft, patent, copyright infringement, dumping product, running up these obscene surpluses, manipulating their currency. They have it all. They understand how to get to us, and then the moment we object, it's you're racist, you're xenophobic, and they laugh at we're so stupid to believe them. You know,
what are they when you say that they look at the United States and they say, oh, it's a tired country, they've had it, it's a broken reed. Are they wrong, and how do we know they're wrong?
Well, we're going to know whether they're right or not in the next 10 years. Because if they become the world's hegemony, what would that mean? Everybody said, China's going to run the world. Well, what does that mean? That means when somebody in Europe wants to take oil out of the Straits of Hormuz, there's no Sixth Fleet to make sure the Iranians don't stop it. And that means if somebody wants to sell Saudi Arabia stuff, you can't get into the Persian Gulf. That means if you want to go through the Panama Canal or the Suez, a choke point, then you do it. And you go to Europe now and you go to Naples or the Piraeus. If you've been there lately, they're beautiful harbors, but they're all owned by the Chinese. And those governments are in hock to them. And so basically, they've got this Silk Road or Belt and Road initiative where they look at the world and they say, if you're in a crisis, how do you stop world commerce? And you choke these plants. If you were a classical historian, you looked at how do you stop the world's commerce, all you would do in the Mediterranean, there's one way in and there's one way out. You stop it at Gibraltar, and they're already trying to deal with the Moroccans at Gibraltar, and then you got to go out at Suez. They're putting pressure on the Egyptians at Suez. We saw what happened when a tanker just, you know, they've already controlled the Panama Canal. They're looking at Antwerp, Naples, and Piraeus, the three big harbors of Europe. So they know what they're doing. And Chinese students study geography. We don't. We study who's woke and who's not.
So what?
Yeah.
I mean, well, two questions. First of all, what has to happen? A reasonable American leadership, what has to be done to make sure that, to protect American interest? And is the Biden administration capable of acting in that way?
Well, the answer to the second is no. I mean, you can't have a president of the United States whose son was deeply indebted to the Chinese. It just doesn't work. And we know Hunter Biden was. And you can't have a president of the United States that has a therapeutic view of the world that says, I mean, all of you run businesses, and you know that if you have a competitor and he's taking advantage of you, and you go out to him and say, you know, the more you take advantage of me, the more you're going to see how wrong you were, and you're going to finally give me a good deal, and I'm not going to get down to your level and fight back. And that's where we are. And the Chinese interpret magnanimity as weakness to be exploited rather than be reciprocated. So that's not going to happen. But what would we have to do? We'd have to have a radical change in our university, because our STEM areas of discipline, and especially engineering and physics, math, science, we're importing people because we don't have enough people studying them and the undergraduate level to go to graduate programs. So the Chinese are ahead of us there. And when you look at a great university like Stanford University or Berkeley or Harvard or Yale, it's not a meritocratic institution anymore. So we're not saying we don't care what you look like, we just want the person who will do the best job, because we're a meritocratic society in competition for our very lives with the Chinese. So that's worrisome. Our educational system is falling behind. The second thing is we need to disconnect, but we can't disconnect abruptly and just say we're so heavily dependent on them in precious metals and semiconductors. And we have this very condescending idea. We think 50 years ago they were impoverished, so they couldn't quite ever imagine that this metal is necessary for cell phones or computer chips or this component, and we're going to focus on about 15 industries without which, we learned from COVID with, you know, medical supplies and drugs, without which the United States can't function. And that's what they've done. And the other thing is we're spending 125% of GDP every year with debt. So if you've got $29 trillion of debt, the Chinese look at that and they say, well, the Americans are borrowing money from the rest of the world to live at a lifestyle they haven't earned. And I'm very scared right now in the next year, because Joe Biden came in and we had already borrowed $1 trillion under Trump for stimulus during the lockdown. So he's got $4 trillion. Now we're up to $29 trillion, and we have a year of pent-up demand, and we're unleashing it. And everybody's had stimulus money, and it's easy to get, and we have these dirt cheap interest rates. A guy called me up the other day and said, would you like to buy a home for $1.4 million? We can give you a loan for $2.2 million. And I said, that $2.2 million won't be worth much to you when we have an annual rate of inflation this year of 8%. So we're going to get a roaring inflation, and you can see it when you try to go to Home Depot and buy lumber or milk or a chicken or gasoline or a new home. So we got too much money chasing too few goods, and what are we doing to the productive sector? Where are we saying, go out and make stuff? We're gonna make sure you're we're saying, you know what, you're too wealthy, you cheated, so we're gonna get more regulations, more capital gains, more corporate taxes, more income taxes, less energy development, less pipelines, more environmental coercion, and so these employers are not gonna produce. And I think we're going to get something we have not seen in 40 years, stagflation, where you get a roaring inflation and you get very little GDP or growth and high unemployment, and I think within a year, if he doesn't change.
Do they have a plan, or is this just strategic incoherence?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not a conspiracist, but if you said, how would I destroy the United States, I would have a virus come from China of mysterious origins, and I'd have the World Health Organization say that it's not transmissible and you don't need any preparations, and then I would have an 80-year-old apparatchik like Anthony Fauci as the head of all medical policy, and then I would have the most left-wing agenda we've seen in 80 years since FDR. And I'd have smiling Joe Biden as the emissary, doesn't really know where he is all the time. And then I would have the Obamas and Kamala Harris and the hard left running through an agenda. And that's pretty much where we are. I'm not saying it was pre-planned, but it was just too many things. You know, it was like perfect storm. We could have survived the pandemic, maybe the lockdown, maybe the self-induced recession, maybe that crazy election, but not all of them. Without something bad happening.
Right. I mean, I look at I look at the entire process that we've all lived through over at least a year, and I especially focus on the riots from last summer. I mean, this was like a thorough desecration of American symbols, American histories, our joint American story. And so, yes, tragically, I have to conclude as well, there's something very bad going on here intentionally.
Every institution that we as traditionalists used to honor, we can't recognize. We look at the retired military or the military, and these generals and admirals are saying, you know, that the President of the United States was a Nazi, he's Mussolini. This is the military saying this. And then we look at the CIA, it's John Brennan's CIA. And they're snooping on people. We look at the FBI of James Comey. I mean, they break down doors, they go after Rudy Giuliani. And so these institutions have all been woke. It's very scary. I don't know where it ends, but it won't end until each, according to our station, say, you know what? I've had it. I'm not going to watch an NFL game. I don't care who won the Oscars. If you ask me who won the Super Bowl 3 years ago, I have no idea. If I have a choice between getting on American and Delta, I'm not going to fly Delta, not until they shape up. We can all, each according to our ability, do something, because the alternative is...
I want to, because we're just about out of time, and I want to end basically where we started, on a positive note.
Yes.
I mean, not a Pollyanna-ish note, but when you were saying about, I don't think that people here grew up or woke up this morning and said, oh, forget it, let the woke campaign be victorious. So what are, looking at it from a historical perspective, how do we move forward? How do we make sure that we win?
Yeah, I'm optimistic because this is our 233rd year, and we lived through a depression, two world wars, and we had people who were much poorer than we, and they survived. And we've been thrown at us, Silicon Valley, Wall Street, professional sports, Hollywood, the corporate boardroom, the media, and they still can't get the country they want because the people are resourceful, they're independent, and they're very hard to control, and they're getting more so that way. So I think if you don't have the people, then for all of Mark Zuckerberg's money and all of the anchors at the network news and every little harangue from a Hollywood actor and every NBA player that says you're terrible, it doesn't matter. We still have the people. And if the people just finally say, you know what, I've been very tolerant. I turn the other cheek, Sermon on the Mount, but now you're telling me to give up my country. And if you want it, come and take it, but I don't think you're going to be able to do it. And I think if people have that attitude, I think they do. I mean metaphorically, that people say, I'm not going to give up the Constitution. Lincoln was a wonderful person. I'm not going to apologize for, for Congressman Nunes. They went after him. He didn't go after them. So if everybody has that confidence, I think they do. I think the people will be shocked in the next midterm election and the next presidential election. We just have to remember that.
Victor Davis Hanson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank all of you very much. Thank you.